I had a lot of pleasure, I mean, for the last 2 days, I mean, listening to all these excellent talks, and I would like to thank our colleagues to have come to the college, and I hope they will come often in the next years. I will just now try to give a few hints on the theme, even though I must say I'm not really an expert in regeneration, but nor in development, to be honest, okay? So what I'm going to tell you about is these transcription factors, you know, these transcription factors which are homeoprotein transcription factors, which are also, I mean, for many of them, if not most of them, morphogenes. And not only genes that encode for morphogenes, but the proteins are themselves morphogenes, the same way that bicoid is a morphogen in the fly. As you can see on this slide, I mean, these proteins have been invented extremely early in the course of evolution. In fact, they are present in the first eukaryotic cells, and they are in all organisms, and pluricellular organisms, you can find them. They are expressed early in development because they are developmental gene products. But as you can see here, they are not only expressed during development. They are also expressed in the adult. And the patterns of expression that you have in the adult is different from that the one you had at different stages of development. And the functions might be different, but the functions might also be in a way similar. And so the issue is what can developmental genes be doing in an adult? So in fact, yesterday when I was coming back from the restaurant to my home, I don't know why, it came back to my mind that someone in the audience had written something a long time ago. I mean, it was in a comment on the paper by Chen and Capecchi on the physiology of the mammary gland in the adult. And no meal today, my hawks have gone away. And for some people here who are old enough, this might ring a bell somewhere. But as you can see here, Denis was alluding to the fact that there might be some adult physiological functions for Hox genes. And one of these functions you could think of is that, in fact, there could be a morphogenetic function. You know, I mean, if you consider that you lose your own weight in cells every year, and that you replace your entire body almost, I mean, with new cells, there is something which is happening in the body, which is silent embryogenesis. I mean, this is a term that Claude Bernard used to write, I mean, silent embryogenesis, which for the sake of the meeting today, I will call silent regeneration, okay? So we're going to talk a little about silent regeneration and try to make the link between development and silent regeneration. As I mentioned, these transcription factors of the homeoprotein family, but not of the other families of transcription factors which are expressed during development and also in the adult, are transferring between cells. We don't have to travel very far away with the transfer between cells. For all of them that we have tried so far, I mean something like 13 out of 250 of 300, and it's very likely that this is shared by most of them because the sequences which are necessary for transferring between cells are in the homeodomain, which is the highly conserved domain of these transcription factors. And in fact, I mean, we and others, I mean, this is not only us, but we and others have shown that this signaling pathway by which, I mean, the transcription factors go from one cell to the other to regulate translation, transcription, and the epigenetic status of the cell, this mechanism is involved, I mean, at all stages of development and also in the adult. I mean, for example, for early patterning and cell migration, for axon guidance and synapse stabilization, for cerebral cortex plasticity and physiology, I mean, all involve the transfer of some of these transcription factors. I was listening to the comment or the question asked by a young lady to one of the speakers today and working on organoids, for example. I mean, and you know, where are the morphogenes coming from? Well, the morphogenes could come from inside the gastrinoid, for example. I mean, the Hox proteins are morphogenes. I mean, the morphogenes could be working from inside and not to have to be added to the culture medium under the form of some goodies that you had to the gravy in which the gastraloids will develop. So something which is very important to realize is that the sequences which allow the transfer of these proteins, signaling factors, growth factors, morphogenes, call them the way you want, the sequences which are necessary to get in and out are in the homodomain. This was clearly demonstrated in the past by us, but in fact in my lab by someone like Alain Joliot, who is now working with Sophie. And these two sequences are in the DNA binding domain. And this made our life pretty difficult to show that these proteins are acting as signaling molecules. Very difficult because you cannot mutate them. If you mutate them, you will modify at the same time the cell autonomous and the non-cell autonomous activities of the transcription factors. So this led us to develop a strategy which I will sort of indicate, use several times or twice, in fact, during my talk. And the strategy was to clone single-chain antibodies and to clone the mini genes that encode the single-chain antibodies and to insert the single-chain antibody either within viruses or in the genome of the mouse under inducible forms, and so that you could induce the secretion of the antibody in the extracellular space and block the protein outside without modifying what happens within the cells. And this indeed will allow you to distinguish purely between cell autonomous and non-cell autonomous functions of these traveling transcription factors. So we start with some work that we've done in collaboration with Takao Hench here, who is presently at Harvard University, but also he just opened a new lab at University of Tokyo. And the people who have been really working very hard on that, I mean, are here, but the first paper that we published with them was, the first order was Sayaka Sugiyama. And here are the people who are still working with us. I mean, with us, I mean with Ariel and me, you know, because Ariel, I mean, is in red here because he's sort of the head of this group now. These people are still present in my lab. David has just arrived and Javier has arrived a few months ago. But these people who have really participated to the work have led the lab, and you can see them, I mean, in italics just below, I mean, from Damien to Clémence. Michel Volovic is here because Michel Volovic, I mean, we've been working together for so many years that he's done almost everything in my lab since we opened the lab something like 40 years ago, that Michel, right? Well, I can't remember really when we opened the lab, I mean, together. Yeah, not that. 40 years, yes, something like that, yes. What did we do with Takao? With Takao, we've been working on what we call the critical periods. You know, in the brain, I mean, the cortex matures postnatally, prenatally, I mean, for many things, but what is sort of printed or imprinted in the cortex, what comes from the outside experience, is postnatal. Okay, for example, learning binocular vision, learning language, learning how to walk, this comes after birth. And the cortex is able to learn, I mean, from the outside, only during critical periods. And my pointer doesn't work very well. There is no other pointer. Yeah, doesn't matter. And as you can see here, before the critical period, your brain is not working, sort of, okay? During the critical period, you're able to learn and to learn extremely fast. And when the critical period has been closed, the CC is gone and you cannot learn anymore, or the ability to learn is heavily reduced in the brain. And the critical periods differ between the areas. For example, I mean, learning how to, the sensory systems mature faster and closes fast earlier. Language and motor is a bit later in time, and all the sort of cognitive functions, to be sort of simple, come later and much later also. I mean, and these critical periods in the different places, region of the cortex, you know, the cortex in the mammals, in the vertebrates, I mean, the mammals, is composed of six layers, and this critical period corresponds to the maturation of these little guys here called the parvalbumin interneurons, okay? So that you are not plastic, then you start maturing your PV cells, you become plastic, And when stability, when maturation is stabilized, when the excitatory inhibitory balance, because these are inhibitor cells, is stabilized, then you lose plasticity. So it's not contrary to what people think that you are smart until a certain age and then become stupid. You're stupid, you're smart, and you become stupid again, okay? And this period when you're smart is called the critical period. Well, you understand why now, okay? So the classical paradigm that I'm not going to develop it, but the classical paradigm to study plasticity is the learning of binocular vision. If you take a mouse and you close one eye before P20, postnatal day 20, which is pretty late, in fact, nothing happens. You reopen the eye and the mouse has a binocular vision. But if you close the eye after P40, nothing happens. The eye remains with the binocular vision. But if you close the eye between P20 and P40 when the cortex is plastic, this eye does not connect properly to the cortex. So that this eye takes over and the animal has a lazy eye. It's an amblyopic mouse. In the human, this happens if you don't operate the kid from the cataract before he or she is 7 years old, okay? So this is a period of plasticity, which is very classical because it's very amenable to experiments because it's very easy to close an eye in a mouse. It's also very easy to remove it, but this is never done. So as you can see here, in this paradigm, I mean, these PV cells in the visual cortex mature between P20 and P30, and here as a peak of the critical period, you have a huge expression of parvalbumin, which is a marker of maturation for these little parvalbumin positive cells. So this means that the cells have been maturing between P19 and P40, but at P30, this is a peak of plasticity. Now, at the same time, you see that you have an expression of OTX2, which is one of these transcription factors, which is a homeoprotein transcription factor. Now, just to be very rapid, I mean, in fact, you have OTX2 in the PV cells, but the gene is not expressed in the PV cells. So the protein is not made by the PV cells, and you can go to the papers. I'm not going to describe that thoroughly because I would like to get to the important point in the context of the title of the meeting. But the protein comes from outside and is imported in the PV cells. And in fact, if you infuse OTX2 in the cortex before the opening of critical period, this is the non-infused side, and you see the parvalbumin cells are not very mature, but you infuse OTX2, it is internalized by the PV cells, and now you see the PV cells are maturing faster because they have internalized OTX2. And in fact, the result of this is that the amount of OTX2, I mean, if you infuse OTX2 early in time, you open plasticity earlier and you close plasticity earlier. If you remove one allele of OTX2, then you don't open plasticity at all, but much later, as you will see. Now, this is very important because it means that if you infuse OTX2, the morphogene, it will recognize specifically a subclass of cells within the cortex. And this subclass of cells within the cortex are the parvalbumin neurons, and this means that these cells have binding sites for the OTX2 morphogene that comes from somewhere else. Now, these binding sites, they are complex sugars. Again, I don't go into the detail because this has been published, but they are complex sugars which can be stained by the specific lectin called WFA, and these binding sites are sufficient to recognize OTX2 because OTX2 has a sequence here which binds to specific sugars within these perineuronal nets which are labeled by the lectin. So, and again, I mean something else, where is the protein coming from? And again, I'm not going through the details because this has been published, but the protein comes from the choroid plexus. Now, this is really amazing because the choroid plexus was always despised in the literature, but the choroid plexus is a very important structure in the brain which secretes a lot of good things for the CSF, a lot of good things for neurons, and also detoxifies the CSF. So OTX2 comes from the choroid plexus, travels through the parenchyma, recognizes the sugars at the surface of the PV cells, internalized by the PV cells, and reaching the first threshold, open plasticity, accumulates, and when it reaches the second threshold, it closes plasticity. So it's a Lewis Volpert French flag system, except that it's a temporal French flag. It's not a special French flag. So early in time, first level I open, I become plastic. Second level of OTX2 of morphogen, I close, I'm not plastic anymore. Well, the good thing, well, so to say, is that if you remove a TX2 in the adult, or if you block the TX2 transfer from the choroid plexus to the PV cells, and one way to do it is to express one of these single-cell antibodies that block the TX2 outside in the adult, like you can see here, from the choroid plexus, and you sort of neutralize your extracellular OTX2 coming from the choroid plexus, you reactivate plasticity. So you can reopen plasticity in the adult, and you can do it in several ways, by removing the sugars, like Tommaso Pizzorosso did it in 2002, by modifying the sugars at the surface of the PV cells by genetic means, modifying the glycosaminoglycan structures, by infusing the RK peptide, which is the domain that allows OTX2 to recognize the PV cell so that there's a competition between this domain and OTX2 for internalization, by removing OTX2 from the choroid plexus by recombining specifically OTX2 in the choroid plexus, or by expressing the antibody. But in all cases, in any of these cases, what you do is that you reopen plasticity in the adult. And this means something which is very important, is that you can open plasticity, then you close plasticity, but plasticity in the adult is the default state of your brain. Like in a frog, like in a chick, like in a newt, we are intrinsically plastic. But because we are smart, we cannot be plastic all the time, because we would be totally stupid. We would not remember anything if the system was totally plastic. So that we need the constant internalization of a TX2 to keep plasticity shut off. But if you remove a TX2 acutely, as I just showed you, you can reopen plasticity in the adult. And this is very important, because it means that you can cure a disease which would be a developmental disease. And this is a way you can cure amblyopia in the mouse. Now, it also tells you something which has to do with the title of the meeting, is that during development, you open plasticity by coming below the plasticity system. But in the adult, you open plasticity by coming by above. And this means that regeneration, so to say, is not similar to development, because you don't get by the same pathways into the plasticity period. So this really, in this system where you have development and reopening of plasticity, which I'll dare call regeneration, in this system you have the evidence that the two systems, the two mechanisms, must be different. Okay. Now, what we did was also to mutate this RK domain in a TX2, making a protein which is still internalized by the cells, but is not specifically internalized by the PV cells. And if you do that, you have a lot of promiscuous TX2 that goes into cells where it shouldn't go, and then it is diluted. So the amount of a TX2 that you should have in your PV cells only reaches the first threshold concentration late in life, say at P100. And this shows you that you don't open any more plasticity when you have this mouse with the AA mutation in the sequence, when the protein that does not specifically recognize the PV cells, the sugars at the surface of the PV cells. Now what happens is that you have a late opening of plasticity. Okay? So this was pretty important, because it allowed us to compare which genes are upregulated or downregulated in the PV cells in several situations where we have plastic and non-plastic states. In the wild type, you are plastic at P30, but you're not plastic at P100. In the mutant here, you're not plastic at P30, but you're plastic at P100. So you do an RNA sequence, an RNA-seq in the PV cells. In all these situations, you can identify genes which are specifically upregulated during plasticity. And because the TX2 is internalized, you can infuse cyclohexamide, you don't need an intervening protein to look at what happens, what OTX2 is doing. So you can, by infusing cyclohexamide and blocking protein synthesis, identify the genes in this series which are direct target of OTX2, true direct targets of OTX2. And there's only two. The two direct targets of OTX2 are GAT45B ta and GAT45 gamma, two enzymes that modify the methylation status of your chromatin. Okay. So this is an evidence that GAT45 alone, if you express GAT45 in the PV cells, is sufficient to reopen plasticity in the adults. So just to show you that this target of OTX2 is a very important target to regulate plasticity in the visual cortex. And in fact, not only in the visual cortex, but here in the visual cortex. And this means that the methylation status of your chromatin is very important for the context, for plasticity. In fact, what we did after, and this is a work done by Jessica, is to compare the pattern of MESCP2 binding sites in the chromatin of the PV cells surrounded by the perineuronal nets compared to non-PV cells. And as you can see here, with maturation, you have a huge modification of the pattern of MESCP2 positive foci in the PV cells, but not in the other cell types. And this plasticity pattern, which you can see here, is reinstilled when you reopen plasticity in the adult, either by blocking OTX2 at the level of the choroid plexus or by expressing GAT45B in the PV cells. This change in the heterochromatin status, in fact, in the status of the in the epigenetic status, so to say, of your chromatin, is accompanied by modification in the pattern of sending of H3K9-methyl-3 and by a change in the number of DNA breaks in your chromatin. You can see that non-plastic, plastic, plastic, this is a staining by gamma H2X that stains the DNA breaks. I'm just saying that here, and we'll come back to that later. In between, I want to show you something, is that OTX2 is present throughout the cortex. Throughout the cortex, it comes from the choroid plexus, and this means that the regulation of plasticity in the cortex by this morphogene in the adult is not only in the visual cortex, it is throughout the cortex. And this is extremely interesting if you think of other functions, in particular of higher brain functions. But I will not discuss this point today. I will now go to another aspect of the work done in the lab, which in sort is related to the same issue, which is the Parkinson's disease stuff. And this is a work which was done in my lab by these people here. We're still in the lab. Julia is surrounded in red because she's the Ariel of the Parkinson's disease. I'm nowhere anymore, you know, I'm just floating around. These people here have left the lab, and these people here are still in the lab, and I will show you what they are doing and what they have been doing, I mean, in relation with the question that you have been raising. So, as I said before, these transcription factors are expressed in the adult. And as you can see here, NGRL is expressed in this little foci here, these structures here, which are in fact the VTA and the substantia nigra. In these cells, this is the expression of NGRL1, this is the expression of NGRL2, this is the staining for tyrosine hydroxylase and NGRL, and you can see that you cannot distinguish between NGRL and tyrosine hydroxylase. You see that all the cells here that make dopamine, a very important neuromediator for motor behavior, are expressing NGRL, NGRL1 and NGRL2. So, you know, why? Well, we remove one allele of the NGRL1. In fact, we took a mouse which was given to us by Wolfgang Wurst in Munich, and when we take one allele of the NGRL1, you can see that you have a slow decrease in the number of Th-positive cells in your substantia nigra. And this creates a phenotype which is reminding of the phenotype of Parkinson's disease. You have motor and non-motor phenotypes which are due to the lack of one NGRL allele in the substantia nigra, also in the VTA. So what we did, now this was, I will jump to some pretty recent experiments where we decided to take the NAGRA before the cells have started to die. You know, they die between 3 and 6 weeks. They start dying very late, in fact, you know, during adolescence, in the case of the mouse. And this, and so we did some laser catcher experiment, and we did the RNA-seq, and using, I think, it's Studio Pathway or Gene Ontology, I don't remember which program we used, but you see that the genes which are different between the NCLAD heterozygote and the wild type are with the highest, I mean, probability of difference are in the DNA damage pathway and in the chromatin remodeling pathway. And this is what is important here. So we look at DNA damage. And indeed, in the NCLAD heterozygote, you can see that you have a higher number of DNA breaks in your chromatin compared to wild type. Not in the VTA, because the VTA degenerates later. But these cells that have not yet started to degenerate, they have already an alteration of the chromatin with a certain number of foci indicating breaks. This is also the case if you look at chromatin marks like the nucleolin, like H3K27MeT3, like lamin B2, like H3K9MeT3, like chromocenters. I don't go into the details, but in these cells, which are missing one allele of NGRAIL, the chromatin is perturbed, okay? And this also means that there's something bizarre in these cells, and the idea was that, in fact, they age faster. They age faster because the chromatin is unfolding. And we speculated that this was a sign of aging, more or less. So what is aging for a cell which is a very active cell, like an aminergic neuron? It's aging has to do, you could think, as with oxidative stress. Okay, so we decided to see whether, by chance, this heterozygote mouse were more sensitive to oxidative stress. And this is indeed the case. You can inject a drug which is specifically internalized by the Th-positive cells because they use the dopamine transporter. And you can see that the number of cells that have breaks in their DNA is higher for the same dose of 6-hydroxydopamine in the N heterozygote. And death is more important in the cells in the heterozygote when you inject 6-hydroxydopamine. And when you look now in, at the epigenetic marks, you can see that you have, when you do stress to your cells, in this case, to wild-type cells, you inject 6-hydroxydopamine, you have the loss of the epigenetic mark. So there's sort of something similar to the fact that you're losing one allele of NGRAIL and that you are submitted to some sort of oxidative stress, suggesting that the N1 heterozygote mouse were aging faster, at least at the level of the THFs. Okay. So the next step was very obvious. Inject 6-hydroxydopamine in the substantia nigra, kill the cells if you do nothing else. But if you come after and you inject NGRAIL, what happens? That you save your cells. Not only do you save your cells, but you progressively restore the epigenetic marks. You progressively remove the breaks. So that, in fact, you have an epigenetic reprogrammation of your cells that allows the cells to become younger in spite of the fact that they have been hit by the oxidative stress. And this is a very strong stress. You know, if you inject 6-hydroxydopamine in the nigra, it's like an atomic bomb in the closet. Okay. It's very nice because it's very long-lasting. It's long-lasting because it is epigenetic. Okay, and in fact, it works for several weeks. And here you have the effect on a monkey, where if you inject NGRAIL in a monkey, when you inject also MPTP to destroy the cells, these are the control animals that very fastly stop walking, and you know they are just crippled animals. But if you have injected NGRAIL, you see that they can stay moving for several weeks, if not for several months. This has just appeared in movement disorders. So now I will go back to something different and try to make the loop, in fact, with the real theme of the meeting. Now, what I'm going to tell you is about, again, permanent turnover. You know, because in the body, you have a permanent turnover of cells. you have a permanent repair of membranes, but what is the structure which is the most affected during life? It's DNA. No. If you take a mouse, yeah, I mean, the mouse is sleeping, not dreaming. If you dream, it doesn't work, okay? It's a deep sleep, and the DNA is more or less spared. But if now you start walking or thinking, you break your DNA. And you can see here, I mean, if you have this mouse, home cage, you take it out of the home cage, it breaks DNA. Put it back, you repair the DNA. So all your life, your DNA, you have 100,000 breaks per day, which is made in the DNA per neuron. It's huge, okay? And now you have to repair this all the time. This is DNA regeneration. But this DNA regeneration is not perfect because the cells are post-mitotic, and then it's non-homologous and joining repair system. And the non-homologous repair and joining repair system is not faithful. So you introduce mutations all the time. And that's why, with time, finally, you age. It happens. Now, what I would try to propose is that these breaks, which are associated with activity, are due to the activity of mobile elements in the genome. What are mobile elements? As you know, I mean, most of our genome is composed of mobile elements. 45% of the genome is mobile elements, half of the genome. So these mobile elements belong to several families, and the main family, not because it is the biggest, because it is the only one which is really autonomous, because it makes everything which is necessary for its own reproduction, is the line 1 family. So the line 1 family has two open reading frames, ORF1 and ORF2. ORF2 encodes for a reverse transcriptase and a nuclease, an endonuclease. And the reverse transcriptase is necessary to make DNA from the RNA, and then the endonuclease is necessary for the DNA to be inserted in the genome for transposition. If you have transposition, because you can make the line, you can have the reverse transcriptase, you can have the endonuclease, you can make NICs, but you don't have to insert. You can just make NICs, okay? Especially in the post-mitotic neurons where there is no cell division. Now, we went back to the RNA-seq experiment that we had done, and because we had seen that upon oxidative stress, we had a small increase in the expression of the line 1, we went back to the data, and we could observe that, in fact, in this heterozygote, in the heterozygote and wild type N1, we have a huge expression of L1A and L1TFGF, so the two main families of these line elements. And this was very interesting because, in fact, it's the full-length protein, the full-length gene which is transcribed, and the full-length protein which is being translated. So in post-mitotic neurons, you have the expression of full-length mobile elements of the line 1 family. We raise a good antibody against ORF1P, and as you can see here, this is the substance nigra, this is ORF1P. It is also outside in many cells, but you have it very heavily labeling the Th-positive cells. So we went to look into the rest of the brain, and in the rest of the brain, you have the expression of line 1 TFGF, line 1A, you also have IAP, you have the sign expression. So in fact, the brain tissues are sites of expression of mobile elements. I said expression, I've not said insertion, okay? And the other thing which is pretty interesting is that you also have the PIWI family. What is PIWI? PIWI is a class of argonaut proteins that binds RNA and block line expression. So you both have the lines expressed and you also have a system that blocks line expression. You have the entire system for the physiological work of this family of mobile elements. So indeed, the next thing to do was very simple. It was to see whether in the N1 heterozygote, because we have more breaks. No, the hypothesis at the beginning was the breaks were made by the mobile elements. Do we have a higher expression of ORF1P in the N1 heterozygote? And the answer is yes. Do you have a higher expression of ORF1P in 6-hydroxydopamine-treated brains? Yes. I will not go into the details of the paper because it was published at the end of last year, but we have the evidence, we bring the evidence, that in a strong oxidative stress, the breaks which are made in the chromatin are due to the expression of the line elements. And if you want to have the details, please go to the EMBO journal. And in fact, this led us to verify if Engrel was regulating line elements. Since Engrel protects against oxidative stress, does Engrel do it by repressing line expression? And this indeed was demonstrated. I don't go again through the details. We have the, but I will show you here this last experiment of a chromatin immunoprecipitation, where you can see that Engrel can immunoprecipitate the line promoters from the chromatin. If you inject Engrel in a 6-hydroxydopamine treated animal, you can see in the presence of cyclohexamide, because you want to see the first genes which are regulated, direct targets, you can see they have a repression of the line transcription. And if you link the activator of herpes virus VP16 fourfold, VP64, to Engrel, to transform Engrel from a repressor to an activator, you now have an activation of your expression of the line elements. And indeed, you can see here that if you block the activity of the lines, you block the effect of the oxidative stress on cell death in your substantia nigra. This takes me to the summary slide of this part before I will finish. And you can see here that the idea is that the lines are normally expressed in the brain. Why are lines normally expressed in the brain? We think that they are normally expressed in the brain because you need to have nicks in your DNA, in your chromatin, to express long genes. We think that the lines, the normal expression of the lines, has the same function, which is normally the function of topoisomerases. Okay? But if you age, if you have an oxidative stress, if you have a mutation which makes you sick and age faster, then you express the line beyond a threshold, which is a no repair threshold, because you make too many DNA breaks and then you cannot repair them anymore. And then you have cell death and neurodegeneration. Okay? Now, you can go back in the other direction. So you can go from the no repair to repair, indeed, by increasing Engrel expression, PWI, or by blocking the activity of the mobile elements. Now, to go back to the non-cell autonomous effect activity of these proteins. Now, as you can see here, I'm sorry that this thing doesn't work well, but as you can see here, Engrel-1 messenger RNA and the Engrel-1 protein is not only in the nucleus, in the substantia nigra. It is also in the terminals. And this led us to speculate by possibly even at the level of the TH cells in the nigra, you may have a non-cell autonomous activity of Engrel. Engrel being secreted and re-internalized by the same cells. So we used indeed these single-cell antibodies, and we did some experiments recently in which we have expressed the antibody. And on the other side, we have expressed a mutated antibody. It's a cysteine to serine mutation that makes the antibody inactive. If you don't have a cysteine, you don't make the disulfide bonds, you don't recognize the epitopes, okay? Now, this is the side where you have the SCSV, the side where you have the mutated SCSV, and what you do, in fact, that you lose some of your dendritic arbor, you lose some of your neurons, and in fact, you can also see that the level of the innervation in the striatum, of the striatum by the neurites, the axons that come from the substantia nigra. And this means that you have this permanent secretion and re-internalization of Engrel, which is necessary to maintain the animal in a perfect shape. So you still have this growth and regeneration of your system, which is dependent on the permanent secretion of your morphogene at the level of an agra by the cells, which themselves respond to the morphogene. I call it silent regeneration. Because indeed, if you lose this morphogene in the adult, then you die, then you withdraw your neurites, then you become sick. And this was confirmed in vitro in experiments in which we have forced the expression of the antibody and the mutated antibody by astrocytes and put on the culture of the astrocytes neurons from the midbrain that express NGREL. And if you do that, you block NGREL outside of your cells, it is secreted by the astrocytes, so you block NGREL outside of the cells, and what you see here is a decrease in the amount of dendrites, and also a decrease in the area which is covered by the neurons, as you can see here. So these guys here, NGREL here, is active within the cell, cell autonomously as a gene regulator, which transcription regulator, line repressor, epigenetic regulating protein, but it is also active as a morphogene going outside and in at the level of the terminals, very likely, but possibly going into other cell types, for example, GABAergic neurons in the reticulata, and this will be looked for. Now, let me go back now to the cerebral cortex plasticity for 1 minute, okay? Now I have surrounded this guy. What happens during the critical period? You know, the period when you are smart, okay? Not before, not after. What happens, in fact, is you have an induction of the expression of ORF1P. You can see here that during this period here, if you look at the number of foci of ORF1P, the intensity of expression of ORF1P, you can see here that you have an increase during the plastic period in the foci of high heavily express ORF1P. And this happens, it's in relation with the formation of gamma H2X of DNA breaks. And if you reopen plasticity in the adult, you also have a re-increase in the number, in the expression of ORF1P in your cells. If you treat your cells, if you infuse in the brain, if you infuse stavidine, what happens now is that you have the blockade of the number of breaks in the PV cells specifically. And this was done by Jessica and by Javier Gilabert recently in the lab, but this suggests that the period of plasticity, which is a period when you make breaks and express the plasticity genes, which are responsible to allow the system either to become mature or to restore, to regenerate, to restore plasticity, is a period of genome instability. So this genome instability is indeed extremely important during not only development, but also what I will call the silent regeneration that you need to have if you want to cure a neurodevelopmental disease. My summary slide, in both cases, be it maturation of cerebral cortex, or be it the Th positive cell pathology and physiology, I mean, you need to have plasticity periods, which are in fact also instability periods. I thank you, and we just have to thank also the agencies that allowed us to do this work, and also I'm going to close the session, and unless you have questions, but we don't have to, okay?